It's a show about fantasy football.
Welcome back to a show about fantasy football, and things are actually starting to ramp up a little bit. Training camp starting this week, and so we're actually going to start having some headlines probably as soon as next week. We actually have a couple headlines today, but today we're going to be talking NFL news. We're going to be talking running back strength of schedule and how that affects your fantasy football team. We're going to be talking about rookie QBs and their outlook for dynasty fantasy football and technically for this season and redraft as well. And then we're also going to be doing our classic Nathan versus Avery trivia where I probably will just get screwed out of winning again. So even though I did end up winning,
Oh my gosh, you won!
Did we figure out the format for that today?
By the way? We did. So you guys are going to be writing it down.
Okay, cool.
Ahead of time, so
Nathan's
there's no
gonna,
3-2
gonna change
1
his answers. So
I'll write it down and send it to you.
I'll mail my answers.
We got
to you.
Some snail mail.
Yeah. Right.
All right. So glad you're here. Like I said, check us out on YouTube if you enjoy the podcast, Domain Fantasy Football and Dynasty Domain, depending on if you're a redraft player, if you're a dynasty player, flockfantasy.com/domain for all of our fantasy football tools, analysis, rankings, articles, databases, all that stuff. So glad to have you, and let's get into NFL news.
Absolutely. So training camp is up and at 'em, and with that, we've got our first big holdout, which we do every single year, the Jordan Love holdout, which Green Bay is optimistic. They want to get a deal done. Of course, everybody always says that. But I think this is a situation where they actually do. What do you guys think?
I think from what I've seen, there's not really a question that he's going to get a deal. We knew that he was going to get a deal because they said pretty much said it at the start of the offseason. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you guys, but I think it's why I've been as comfortable drafting Jordan Love in the second round of Dynasty Stars drafts as I am drafting almost any quarterback in the first. Honestly, like, because I know he's going to have he's obviously produced, right? Produced at a top 10 level. And if he has the contract insulation, it's not like he's in a bad situation. Good coach, good offense, good weapons. I mean, I don't really know what else we'd need to see here. I don't know, because Trevor Lawrence, remember, when he got his contract, didn't really see a boost in value in Dynasty. Pretty much stayed exactly where he was. Yeah. Do we see a value boost for Jordan Love? Like, because he's going in the same range as Lawrence.
I don't think we'll see much of a value boost for him, because the one thing that we have yet to see is a full season of consistent production, and he has to showcase that to really solidify himself into the first round, because he doesn't offer a ton of rushing upside. So he's kind of, I think, already being priced with the assumption that he's going to get signed, because the Packers have nowhere else to go.
One thing that I think you guys will probably relate to this, I think we learned our lesson with contract insulation being the main driving factor of value. We learned it with Daniel Jones, right? Because Daniel Jones got a decent contract, it was a good contract for Daniel Jones.
Yeah, but there was an out after year two that was very clear, because everything was guaranteed up front.
Either way, it was a contract nonetheless, and it did boost his value in Dynasty.
Yes.
And he was going way too high, and it burnt us. So with Love, I don't suspect that's what's going to happen, but I will say he's going to be more valuable in my eyes once he has a contract. Like, I've kind of been baking that into his price already. It's why I've been taking him above ADP.
I think that's why he's being priced the way that he is right now anyways, because they assume that he's going to get a contract.
I guess. So I don't have any reason to be less comfortable with Jordan Love than I do with Anthony Richardson right now.
Correct.
Honestly, Justin Herbert.
Or Herbert, honestly, yeah.
Burrow, honestly, I'm being 100% honest.
Kyler, yeah.
Yeah. So
he's in that same tier for me.
Yeah, he's a good value, and he's definitely a good, you know, back into dual league QB, so. I think he gets a contract.
Absolutely. Also, we got some other big PUP list information coming out. Some of these are not surprising at all. Of course, TJ Hockenson, Jonathan Brooks, Mike Williams was a big surprise, at least in my eyes. We also got Jaden Reed, Ricky Pearsall, and Keaton Mitchell. So a few guys here, of course, recovering from big long-term injuries, but also some surprise ones where it's like, okay, I thought some of these guys were going to be ready to go, and they're not.
Ricky Pearsall was kind of one that his value went up for one day, or like actually a couple hours, because the same day Brandon Ayuk requested a trade, and so everybody was like, my Ricky Pearsall shared blah blah blah, and then he came out immediately on the
pup list.
Nah. I was like, yeah, no.
But the pup list is so overrated in my opinion. Like, people overreact like no other with the pup list specifically.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
The pup list now does not mean beginning of the season pup list and you're going to miss four games. Like, I do not understand why it's such a big deal to people.
Ryan, yeah, what's the word in Minnesota about Hockenson?
As you guys said in your recent TJ Hockenson hype video, he's the team hasn't issued like a statement or anything talking about his recovery. However, he was on Bussin' with the Boys, the podcast with Taylor Lewan and Will Compton, very recently, and was saying that his recovery has been kind of what we'd expect. I mean, he tore his ACL so late in the season, and he does have damage to other ligaments. It wasn't just the ACL, but he's at a point now where he's able to run. He's able to do cuts at a slower pace, but you can't play football at a slower pace. So really doesn't matter until he's able to run at full speed and make cuts at full speed, which he hasn't even... He said, I'm sure he could do it now, but probably not smart.
So
I just saw a stupid sleeper alert today. It wasn't stupid, but yeah. the info about it's Hawkinson, real. I thought it came directly from the Vikings, said that he's well ahead of schedule.
Yeah, Kevin O'Connell said basically today that he was well ahead of schedule from a standpoint of the benchmarks on his rehab. So, I mean, do you count that as official from the team, Ryan?
Yeah, I did not see that. This is what happens when you have your phone on do not disturb for 8 hours of the day.
Does that make you the happiest?
I mean, it certainly is positive that he's ahead of schedule, but it doesn't, I'm not going to temper my expectations or do the opposite, I guess. I'm going to keep my expectations tempered. Because like I said, he was a late season ACL tear, and I know surgery has gotten better over the years, but I still remember when Adrian Peterson tore his and came back in like 10 months and everybody was shocked. So if TJ Hawkinson comes back in 10, he's still going to be back in what, late November?
Right.
Ooh, sick.
Yeah. On
I'd still expect him to start the season on the pup list, just if anything, to be safe. Like, there's no reason this year for them to really rush him into it when they're kind of playing the long game anyways, especially with the quarterback situation.
Ryan, what about Addison?
So, I mean, there hasn't been anything yet. I guess I'm the Vikings correspondent. I kind of like this.
Did you like our video today?
I did. The first, it was probably the first like 10 minutes were just Addison and Hawkinson. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. We did it for you. So,
but yeah, there hasn't been a lot of word out of Addison. I checked today, just cause we were kind of chatting about it. There hasn't been any word. They haven't released his BAC or anything. One of the beat writers, from around here said that there's a chance that it might be marijuana related rather than an alcohol, induced DUI, which is kind of only better in the court of public opinion, because weed is legal in California. Obviously so is alcohol, but driving isn't. You get the point. Right. But they would pull
no
blood
driving
for
in
that
California at all.
Yeah,
it's illegal.
They would pull blood to see if he was under the influence. So that might be the delay and why we haven't seen any further advancements from that. But to be fair, Rashee Rice was in a hit and run 7 months ago and we haven't heard anything.
Well, I mean,
was that 7 months
ago? It was a while
ago,
yeah.
Wow.
No way.
It wasn't 7 months. That was an exaggeration. Yeah. Okay. It was more like five.
Still.
No, it's been a long
time. It's crazy.
And we haven't heard squat.
Time flies.
I did mention on the video, like it happened in California, which, I mean, owning marijuana, smoking marijuana is not even a crime there. But they don't prosecute you for some of the actual serious things in California. So that did make it a little bit better on my end as a dynasty owner. I'm like, oh, it was in California where anything goes. So,
right.
I mean, that's part of the reason that people are leaving California is because, you know, you can do anything you want that's illegal there and people don't get in trouble for it. So the Jordan Addisons of the world are the ones clearing out California.
All right. And there's our political segment for the day. Now we're going to be back on.
Hey, that wasn't political. That was
giving you a hard time.
That was legal. That was legal analysis.
All right. We're going to get into RB strength the schedule here, and kind of talk about, of course, the most volatile position in fantasy, the one that wins you your league or loses you your league. And there's so many variables that are completely out of your control going into the RB situation, trying to figure out. We've already talked about RB dead zone, all that kind of stuff. Next, we're going to focus on strength of schedule as another variable in this huge puzzle of trying to figure out which RBs we should take, which we should avoid, when we should try and trade them throughout the season. You know, do we trade this guy halfway through because his schedule gets hard? So we're going to be looking at that today as another edge to your fantasy football game to get you to that next level to say, okay, I know this guy is going to be doing this these weeks, and really trying to get that edge. So over last season, we kind of, I found this chart online, kind of talking about an RB average points per game per season. So let's say we've got Kenneth Walker getting 10 points per game, just throwing numbers and a name out. Last season, Denver was the absolute worst against running backs.
Go figure.
5.7 extra fantasy points per game, which is absolutely trash. So normally Kenneth Walker and going against them might average 10, but because they're a terrible run defense, at least they were last year, we'll see if that changes. He would be projected to get 15.7. Now, if he went against Detroit, who absolutely crushed running backs last year, he would be projected 4.8 points less. That would be a difference of 5.2 points for Kenneth Walker against Detroit versus 15.7 against Denver. And so basically the takeaway from this is we can see there's an upwards difference of over 10 points dependent on the RB matchup. So we should be looking for these matchups throughout the year to kind of try and exploit that. Kind of wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on this, if this is a viable piece of RB strategy we should look into.
I definitely think it is. Where did you get this data? So interesting.
I have like 5 different sources. I'm trying to remember which one this is from.
Like, is this something we can track during the season? Like, you know? So we can refer to it like during our videos? Because this is...
All it is average points per game across the league, and then how many points on average a team is above that value. So we just need a sample set.
How about this? I don't know right now off the top of my head because I don't have the link right now, but I'll put it in the we'll put it in the show notes.
So yeah, the reason this is interesting to me is because, like, you remember last year when we were giving people advice during the season, we were telling people like, hey, look, you've got somebody playing Denver's defense.
And we
were right. You look at Denver. Denver is the top against running back and the top against tight end. They're giving up the most points.
But it was also a tale of two halves for Denver, too. It was the first half of the season, and then the latter half of the season, they got a lot better.
But they actually, for wide receivers, they actually were a bad matchup,
right?
Which is interesting. Because I've thought about it overall. It's like when I think about, you know, strength of schedule and players on your fantasy team, I think about, like, defense overall. Your overall defensive ranking. This breaks it out not only into position, but it talks specifically about fantasy scoring.
Yeah.
It's a really good metric. So yes. I think this is not only relevant, I think this is something that we should use in our videos. Some of the examples on here is for you guys who can't see the chart, which is all of you because this is a podcast. So it's the points PPR allowed above opponent's average per game, like John mentioned. So, like, for example, last year in the quarterback column, Philadelphia gave up 4.5 points over average. Washington, 4. The Chargers, 3.5. The Texans, 3.2. Jacksonville, Detroit, Arizona, LA, Miami, Atlanta, all over average by over a point.
I was going to say that I'm kind of viewing it in 3 different thresholds, right? It's plus or minus a point as your one threshold that's kind of neutral, and then everything above that and below that. So that's like Philadelphia. I remember Philadelphia in 2023. It got so easy to predict what wide receivers were going to have boom weeks just based on who was playing Philly.
Well, I mean,
every week it was so easy.
Yeah. And even thinking back, like, Atlanta was a run defense we were avoiding, and Atlanta actually was right there in the middle. So that's interesting as well. The Jets, obviously, you know, giving up the least in quarterback and wide receiver, which we kind of knew that their defense was good, but specifically against those two, because when you're looking at some of the other ones, they actually gave up a ton of points to running backs, 2.2 points over average and 2 points over average for tight end. So even these elite defenses, some of them are much better against certain position groups than others.
Oh, hands down. Yeah.
That's important. And even the distinctions between wide receiver and tight end, because wide receivers, I mean, between running back and wide receiver, it makes sense that there's a difference, right? Yep. Because they're doing different things on the field.
Right.
But wide receiver and tight end are doing similar things on the field, right? In terms of how they're getting their fantasy points. And they're very different for a lot of these teams. This is really interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even looking at Denver overall against running backs, they gave up 5.7 extra points against tight ends. It was 3.4, but against wide receivers, they had 3.3 less points per game than expected. Well, just for sake of continuity, we'll try and stick mostly to the running back one. But overall, this is something we'll probably be able to add in. I'll have to check for you guys to start sits as like, okay, is this team a team we should be looking out for? I'll just read off some of the worst run ones to go against last year. Again, don't take this as gospel for this year. Detroit. -4.8. LA, -3.5. Tampa Bay, -2.5. Dallas, -2.3. New England, -2.3.
That adds up. I mean, all those teams had really, really solid front fours. And then all the guys at top, Denver, right? Arizona, Turnstile. The Colts consistently could not stop the run. One interesting thing about Indy last year is we were always saying how many receivers we're producing against them, but across right league average, we're right in the middle. They're neutral. And we always thought their weakness was a secondary, which I still think it is.
It is on an NFL field, but from a fantasy perspective, exactly. It's not making that big of a difference. That's why this is super interesting, because it's telling a different story than what we were seeing from an overall defensive efficiency standpoint, mm-hmm. and also from a real-life NFL standpoint.
Yeah.
I mean, so you mentioned the start-sit tool. Mm-hmm. We'll be debuting a start-sit tool. I think I'm going to call it the green light start-sit tool.
Yep.
But basically what it is a number of factors each week. We're basically simplifying it down to...
We have four lights?
Yeah, so there's going to be... One of the green lights, though, is the opposing defense, right?
Right.
And okay. So I was wondering... I was trying to figure out a good way to quantify that.
This is how we're going to quantify it. Yep.
There we go.
This is so exciting.
Oh, my gosh.
That's why I asked when we got... Like, when you showed me this, I was like, can we track this in season? Because we could use this. And this is the best indicator that I've seen for us to look at it and be like, okay, they're playing a favorable defense for this position.
Yes. Okay. And this can evolve as well.
I know. So
like... In season. So
some of the other, this is trademarked, by the way, so don't try to steal it. Some of the other, you know, green lights here are the offensive, kind of the same thing. It's going to be easier to grade than that, because we're just going to basically grade how good of an offense or how efficient an offense is for fantasy purposes. We're going to talk about betting lines, other contexts like injuries, weather, like the refs, historical injuries. So it's going to be...
Refs? Okay, not going to lie. Refs are like legit.
I know.
The real deal. They can really affect fantasy production.
I mean, have you watched game by game. Scott Foster and Chris Paul?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, you tell me refs don't matter in a sports game. You tell me that man cannot win when Scott Foster is officiating. So yeah, that's why I was asking that. So we definitely need to have somebody, you know, in charge of keeping this database up to date, because it's going to be nice.
But
this is good data. Yep. So this is really interesting. What else do you want us to take away from this, John?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a great section.
Well, let's talk about specific running backs, or if you don't believe that, you know, let's say Ezekiel Elliott is going to be the lead back, you think it's going to be Rico Dowdle for whatever reason. We'll talk about those teams that are going to have tough schedules. We'll go through three guys that I think are going to have a tough schedule, and then we're going to touch on just two guys that I think either a trade for or trade away at a certain point. Really just overall good, strong candidates. So looking at schedules this year, kind of went through teams individually, put those up against what was a general consensus, like, hey, these are the run defenses that you should not be going against. And again, there's a lot of opinions on this right now, because a lot of it's up in the air. But I came across three specific names of people to avoid. First, the Dallas Cowboys with Ezekiel Elliott. Then we've got Josh Jacobs and the Green Bay Packers, and Saquon and the Eagles.
Huh.
Now, you'll notice a common factor here of the Eagles and Cowboys are in the same division, and that is just brutal. Absolutely brutal.
They play the AFC North this year.
Yep.
And I see that's a common
straight
denominator.
Up. That's great division. Probably the best division in football.
And they both play Tampa Bay, right? Like, Tampa Bay was the first one that came to mind last year for run defense. Like, they, for the past 3 years, have been, like, the best run defense on paper in the NFL.
Right. So, they're also, like, one of the oldest defenses in the NFL as well, too, which is a little bit of a concern. I feel like at some point you'd expect to fall off.
True. That's definitely true. That
Shaq Barrett also just retired.
Because that defense was also built for their Super Bowl runs, and their Super Bowl runs are over. They've still got the guys on contract, but eventually they're going to start filtering out. So so that's the part of that. That's a good note, because that's the part of this that I want to be careful with, because I think a lot of this being used in a predictive environment is going to be largely dependent on how much of the defense is returning. Is the defensive coordinator returning?
What's the scheme the same?
Yeah. Even head coach turnover is going to typically lead to more.
And what they want to focus on.
Right.
Well, so, and if you strictly, I'll say this as a heads up for people, if you go strictly off of strength of schedule, I was looking through some articles and trying to determine, okay, how much should we be considering this? This is just a small piece of the puzzle. People that were saying, like, okay, you need to be starting this person or this team, people were saying a few years ago, like, do not draft Saquon. His strength of schedule is so hard.
Right.
Those people were wrong.
Correct.
Right. And so this is just a small piece of the puzzle. But, I mean, facing the whole AFC North as well as the Eagles and Cowboys being interdivision rivals, going against those divisions, going against Tampa Bay. Along with that, the Eagles also are going against the Rams, who were the number two team you didn't want to play. They lost Aaron Donald, but they did draft some absolute beasts on the D-line and on their defense to kind of replace that. So, and then as for Green Bay, of course, they've got the Lions twice, which is the absolute worst team to go against as of last year, right? You just don't want to be doing that. And then you've got New Orleans, who's been very stout, LA Rams, Philadelphia Eagles. But those were the three that I was like, hey, you should just bake this into their price. This might only be a difference of a coin flip or a few ADP, but this is the type of thing you can look at schedules and say, oh, man, Ezekiel Elliott is not going to be able, with a worn-out body, to sustain this whole season. He might start off hot, but...
Yeah. Very cool. All right, do you want to do the game show now?
Absolutely, Ryan. It's up to you, man. You got it.
Before we move on, I just wanted to touch super, super briefly. If you look at the list of bad teams there, Denver, the Chargers, and Vegas are all very, very bad. So Isaiah Pacheco might be a dog this year, but you might have to sell him partway through the season because his playoff schedule is abysmal in the end of their season. Their final four games are against Houston, Cleveland, and the Steelers, who are all very stout defenses. So keep that in the back of your mind.
You're talking about a probably mid-season flip candidate even.
Precisely.
With Pacheco.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a good note.
All right, Ryan.
All right. Game show. You guys are familiar with Wordle, of course, right? The game that swept the nation during COVID. Thousands of iterations of games like that. My favorite as a draft Nick is Draftle. Now,
I suck at this.
It's a little play on it. I tried to keep it fairly fantasy relevant, but you guys you'll pick up on it. And I'm going to ask you three questions. Each of them have two hints that will, be given if need be. And then there is one tiebreaker. So we are going to jump right into it. The first question, in the 2016 NFL draft, who was the first wide receiver drafted?
You don't want us to be able to see the hints, right? Because they're on the screen.
I mean, oh, shoot. I forgot about that. Well, you got the... All right. Well, you guys have hints.
All right.
This should make it easier.
Write it down first.
Yeah. And the hints are not helping me. It's you not might helping as well give me the hints because I don't know. Frick. That was 8 years ago.
It was one of the worst wide receiver draft classes of all time.
Well, that's easy.
Thanks. Oh, crud.
I feel like I know the name. Like, I feel like I know who you're talking about because I feel like I heard it on another trivia channel I watched, but I don't remember what his name is.
I don't remember his name either. I have an idea because I'm going to say something after we write it down.
I honestly don't know.
Let's get some guesses in here soon, fellas.
I'm about to punt.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean,
he's got some name alliteration.
My
by
guess
the way.
Would. I mean, the only like Browns receiver I remember from that long ago is Josh Gordon.
Exactly, and I know
he was
it's
before
not him.
That. So I don't know, Brian. That you've got you're stumping both of us. So you
this why
was this guy a special teamer? Like was he a specialist, like a punt returner?
He did some of that. Yes.
Yeah, I think I know who you're referring to, but I do not remember his name.
All right. I believe he won a Blitnikoff when he was in college. The correct answer is none other than Corey Coleman.
I have no idea.
Gosh, that wasn't even
that.
Who I was thinking of. That's horrible.
Cool, it's a draw.
Yeah, that's terrible.
That was great. Yeah, the 2016 draft class was atrocious. Moving on, question two. Julio Jones was the second wide receiver drafted in the 2011 draft class. Who was first?
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh boy.
This one I think is significantly easier using the hints.
Yeah.
So he attended Georgia.
Yeah.
Drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, I know. I've got an answer for this one.
I'm sure listeners are screaming in their cars and in their cubicles right now.
Yeah.
Why am I blanking on this one?
Blank.
Dang, dude. Gosh,
I guess just guess.
Beats me.
I think I'm right, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. All right. Answer.
All right. My answer is AJ Green.
AJ Green was earlier. My answer Nathan. Is Boyd. I do not have an answer. I cannot think of who it was in 2011. Oh, my gosh, Nathan.
Unfortunately for you, Nathan,
it was in 2011?
Green. I thought it was. Arizona Cardinals legend.
2011.
Yeah, because last year was like his, or this last year was like his 13th.
No, I thought he was drafted in like 08, 09.
No, because Calvin Johnson was drafted that early, but...
Yeah,
Calvin Johnson was the receiver there.
I know,
before.
But Megatron retired so early, and AJ Green retired so AJ late. Ground it beef. Felt like that. I felt like he was just around for so long.
That's the title for the episode. AJ Ground Beef. Ground beef.
Yeah, well, sucks for me. I thought that was too easy.
I couldn't think of anybody else it would be.
Yeah.
So
I was like, there's no way it was AJ Green, but.
Indeed, right. It was. Question three. Avery, you're in the driver's seat.
Nice.
Time to bring it home.
Don't choke, moron.
Question three. After Saquon Barkley was taken second overall in the 2018 draft, who was the second running back taken? Your two hints for this one.
Oh.
He led college football, all of college football, in rushing in 2018. And he attended San Diego State University. He's an Aztec.
Man.
This is how you know Ryan has way more college knowledge than all of us.
I was going to say, I have a name from this draft, but he definitely didn't go to San Diego State.
Did he only attend San Diego State?
He only attended San Diego State.
Dang it, dude.
I don't know. I'm going to guess.
Oh, my God.
I thought these questions were easy.
I don't know. I'm trying to think who this would be.
Oh, my goodness. San Diego State. Oh, what running backs have they?
I can't really think of it.
No,
not even. There's two of them. There are two running backs who have been out of San Diego State.
I've got a guess, and I'm pretty sure I'm 100% wrong. So
I'm thinking of a different state. And it's wrong. I know every one of my guesses. Well, there's 49 of them. It's ticking me off, dude. Oh my gosh.
All right, I'm ready for my guess. So my guess, I don't know where Rashad Penny went to college, but he's my guess.
Oh, that is a good guess. I think he went later though, but you could be right.
Who's yours?
I do not know, dude. Christian McCaffrey, I thought, went second in that draft, and was Dalvin Cook went to Florida State. Was he that same draft class?
Those both of them 17? Both of them are 2017.
Both of them are 2017. I
so you don't have one.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan, who is it?
It is Rashad Penny.
Nice. Nice.
Jeez.
Yeah, look at you
I
go.
Rashad Penny went late first round.
I honestly didn't.
Well, no. He did go late first round. This is just second drafted running back.
Drafted, yeah. So I honestly didn't know he went to San Diego State. I'm not even lying. I just was timing it with like 2018, and then I was thinking of somebody who was super hyped up around then, and I thought of Rashad Penny. So, all right, good deal.
Yeah. Wow, look how smooth the game show's going right now.
I know. It wasn't a rigged election.
You won!
I know. Let's do the tiebreaker just for fun.
All right. A little bit older, out of our time, but what three schools did Randy Moss sign a letter of intent for to play college football? This is a little in the weeds, and I'm sure that this is going to be a much tougher one to get. Three schools. How many of them did he actually play games for? One.
Yeah, I know the one he played for.
I don't think I know the one he played for. I don't remember.
I don't remember either. I have no clue.
Well, maybe the hints will jog your memory. Right. The three teams, the conferences that they play in, one is an independent, one is in the ACC, and the other one is now in the AAC. They were not at the time that Randy Moss was there, as that wasn't a conference. However, they're now in the AAC.
Independent as in like independent conference, or independent as in like Notre Dame independent?
That's what they're saying.
It is. Okay. Okay.
Good question.
There's so many conferences that are not Power 5, though.
Is AAC American? What is that?
Irisin, it's actually Conference USA, not AAC.
Oh boy, I don't know any conference. Yeah. Am I allowed to look up Conference USA teams?
Is that legal? Probably not. We should probably just move on because you already won the game.
Yeah, that's true. All right, what are the schools? Notre Dame is one of them, right?
Okay, is that your only guess?
Notre Dame, Wake Forest, and somebody else. I don't know. I don't know where he played.
I have Notre Dame, Clemson, just because, and then Marshall is where he went to college and played.
So close, Nathan. The ACC school was Florida State.
Florida State.
All right.
Florida
State.
There you Clemson go. Yeah, Notre Dame. Guess too on that.
Yeah. Notre Dame, Florida State, Marshall.
Nice.
All right, Ryan, we got not long, so it's all you. I got to leave in 10 minutes, so.
All right, well, we'll hammer it out pretty quick. This is a topic we've gone over ad nauseum on both the Dynasty channel and the Redraft channel. It's not something we need to spend a super long amount of time discussing, but rookie quarterbacks. They're super imperative for both Dynasty and Redraft, just because they're polarizing prospects. Usually, seemingly, they get drafted above where they finish because they're coming into a season that they have not prepared for nearly as much as they should. Not familiar with the offense, the level of skill that you find in the NFL, so many other factors. However, doesn't mean we can't have opinions on them and kind of project out what we think is going to happen. So I'd like to just quickly run through the five quarterbacks who were taken in the first round this year who are actually going to play games more than likely. So sorry, Michael Penix fans, but he's not going to sniff the field unless Kirk Cousins blows another Achilles.
No. Then why did they draft him?
You know, Avery, there are some unanswerable questions in this world, and that is chiefly among them. So let's just jump right in. Caleb Williams, first overall pick. He's, you know, the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck, yada, yada, yada. We've heard it all 1,000 times. We know that he is going to be the day one starter for the Bears. They added so much talent around him in free agency and in the draft with Romo Dunze trading for Keenan Allen and signing DeAndre Swift. What do we think is going to happen there? Like, do we think he's going to be fantasy successful? I mean, he's going in the back half of first rounds in dynasty startups. In terms of redraft ADP, he's not going at the same level, but he's still being drafted relatively high at quarterback 8. Never mind. That is dynasty. Whoopsies.
He's going as a QB 11 right now in underdog ADP. In fantasy. Yeah. I think with Caleb Williams, to me, production wise, he has low end QB1 upside. Same as CJ Stroud. He's not gonna have elite rushing upside, at least to me. He's mobile. They have plenty of receiving assets there to help him out. They have DeAndre Swift. But for us to project a rookie to produce any higher than that, where one, we've never seen it before, and the greatest rookie season that we ever saw was last year, and that didn't even produce a top 6 season for CJ Stroud. I think it would be way, way aggressive to predict that he's going to have some insane year. I'm going to be realistic. I think he has high-end QB2, low-end QB1 upside. Like most rookies do, and they're going to hopefully ease him in, unlike Justin Fields, who they thought could pass and was, couldn't even make a first read consistently. But with him, I that's kind of my projection for Caleb Williams this year. I think he'll be, a second starter in a super flex league that's, going to consistently produce for you and maybe have some down weeks, but overall is just kind of going to produce status quo and probably maintain his value, obviously, going into his second year.
Avery, what say you?
John, what say you? I want to hear what you say.
I think with Caleb Williams, he's one that I feel like is going to do all right. I mean, he's got enough weapons around him to be a successful quarterback. I feel like with the hype that comes with quarterbacks, I tend to be on the side of, yeah, he'll be average. I don't feel like that's a spicy take at all. But, he's going to be somebody that we consistently see continue to build upon his creativity that he's already started. And I think in the NFL game, he's going to need to find a way to continue being creative, but being productive within that, I think, is his biggest, his biggest NFL challenges, because he has the creativity and has the skills. Problem is, that's not always the best path. You know, so he's going to need to burn out some parts of his game that I think he can improve on. So,
yeah,
right. I hear you. I've got him kind of finishing as a tale of two stories, but at the end of the day, a value riser equivalent to, I mean, CJ Stroud was a value riser. Trevor Lawrence was a value riser. I think he's going to land closer to Trevor Lawrence because you don't see repeat historical seasons all too frequently.
Yeah.
We'll move on to Jaden Daniels next, who I think out of the class of quarterbacks probably has the highest ceiling with his rushing ability being way better than everybody else. However, it's the Washington Commanders. I don't think they've had a good quarterback since my pride and joy Kirk Cousins was there. In fact, I know they haven't, and I don't think it's going to be a great situation for him either.
Yeah, I think his fantasy outlook is going to be a lot more positive than his real life NFL outlook. As a rookie, I think you're going to see some pretty solid production, and past that, they're probably going to be a 4-12 or 4-13, 6-11 football team. They're so deficient on the defensive side of the ball. They traded away all of their best players who weren't even that great outside of Montez Sweat. They have plenty of development that needs to be done there. And then on the offensive side of the ball, they have plenty of guys, but they're kind of just guys. Terry McLaurin is really, really good. He's a great guy to have in that room to help Jaden Daniels develop as a receiving asset, but we kind of know what he is, especially in fantasy. We know what he is. I think Dotson, you know, obviously has an avenue to be productive this year, but will he take that next step up after his development has seemed to really slow down with horrible quarterback play the first 2 years of his career? I really don't know. That's kind of a toss up. Ben Sinnott, I'm a huge Ben Sinnott truther and what his production upside could be this year as a rookie tight end. I know it's kind of bold, but I just love the pairing of tight ends and young, inexperienced rookie quarterbacks. I think what Ben Sinnott offers as a route runner is like perfect for what Jaden Daniels offers as a rookie passer and what his skill set was at LSU. So for me, I think you're going to get pretty mediocre passing work from Jaden Daniels. You're probably going to be running B-Rob and Eckler into the ground as much as you possibly can to take the pressure off of Jaden Daniels. But also, I mean, don't be afraid to see some crazy shots taken downfield because this is a Cliff Kingsbury-led offense now. And I think that's definitely worth noting. I don't think Jaden Daniels is going to be Kyler Murray right out the gate, obviously. But, you know, clearly they hired Cliff Kingsbury for a reason. And I don't think it's coincidence that he is calling the plays for a dual threat rushing quarterback that has some passing upside, just like he was with Kyler Murray.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and here's the thing too. I think with Eckler, it's going to be interesting seeing how he gets used in that offense.
Yes.
Because generally speaking, you know, as a Ravens fan, I don't see Lamar doing a bunch of, you know, when he's looking to scramble, checking down a bunch. And that would be my one concern with Eckler. And I'm a huge Sinnott guy. Like, really think this is a pairing that is going to work out well and is somebody that I am absolutely seeking in drafts. I think with Jaden Daniels, it's going to be, we're going to get to see, really, he has the ability to stick in the pocket and make reads and avoid hits, but are we going to see a lot of one read and run? Is Cliff going to draw that up? Because that's a lot of what they did in his college days. So I'm going to be curious to see because I think he can make a lot of the reads, but we'll see how often they ask him to do that. And I think they've got lots of check down and easy options built in for him to succeed along with his escapability.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely agree with you there.
I'm right there with you. I think his rushing upside is going to give him like a QB2 floor just because if he's going to run the ball as much as we think, we know the quarterbacks are more efficient in terms of point production when they do it on the ground. That being said, he does have a lot of options, as you said, Nathan. A lot of them are just guys. But we saw it last year with CJ Stroud. He had just a guy in Dalton Schultz as his tight end, and Dalton Schultz produced a great season, and CJ Stroud loved to use him.
Right.
I see something similar happening this season with Sinnott, but also let's not forget Zach Ertz is in that offense too. And I know he's not the Zach Ertz of old, but he's still not nothing. I wouldn't want him on my team, on my fantasy team, but in terms of NFL production, I think he's going to be that veteran voice on the offense that Jaden Daniels might be able to look to. And just one more thing on him, Nathan, as you pointed out with Cliff Kingsbury and his downfield passing attack, Terry McLaurin is one of the best contested catch wide receivers in the NFL. And if Jaden Daniels really wants to let it rip downfield, I think Terry McLaurin is going to be a recipient of a lot of those, and he's going to make a lot of very spectacular catches because that's just what he does.
Yeah. Yes. That'd be really nice to see for him. And I think that'll amount to Terry McLaurin finishing the season as a wide receiver too. Like
what
he has his entire career.
Wait, are you saying he's going to do what he has always done?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
Really going out on a limb.
Wow. I know. Ryan, I am curious what you think about Drake May, because we were talking about the rushing upside of Jaden Daniels. Are we sleeping on the rushing capability and rushing upside that Drake May potentially offers for the New England Patriots and for us in fantasy?
Short answer, yes. I do think we are sleeping on it. And I mean, in the pre-draft process before he got taken by New England, me, huge comp guy, said that he is a weird hybrid between college Justin Herbert and college Daniel Jones. He had the legs of Daniel Jones and the passing ability of Justin Herbert. Don't think he's going to have the rookie season passing ability of Justin Herbert, but I do think the legs of Daniel Jones are something that is more attainable for Drake May, at least early on in his season. We'll have to see how well acclimated he gets with his receiving core because, I mean, we've covered it before on the show and on the channels. They've got a lot of guys, but no good guys. Like, they're all just kind of up in the air. It could be Pop Douglas. It could be Jalen Polk. It could be Javon Baker. Could be geriatric Kendrick Bourne. Who knows?
Exactly.
I do think the court of public opinion is sleeping on his legs a little bit. I do think he can really move the ball on the ground. And I do think it's going to help him with a fantasy floor, assuming that he starts more than half of the season. I mean, obviously on dynasty rosters, he's owned, but I could see, depending on how the preseason goes, once we get into really heavy redraft season, I could see him kind of being left off of draft boards. Just because if he's not the guaranteed starter day one, they're going to rock with Brissett for a little bit.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is definitely a conversation that could be derailed the second that announcement comes out that Jacoby Brissett is starting the season. And at that point, you're just hoping that at some point he's going to get the opportunity in your standard fantasy redraft league where you can just pick him up off waivers halfway through the season, kind of like a JJ McCarthy situation. But for me, I hope Drake May starts just selfishly. I just want to watch him play as a rookie, and I want to see what he can do. And I want to see how he can elevate Jalen Polk's game, Javon Baker's game, Pop Douglas. I want to see what he can do as an exclusive slot wide receiver with an actual quarterback in the offense that has actual upside, who can throw the ball more than 2 yards down the field. And yeah.
Bailey Zappe.
Well, and here, I'm gonna push back on a lot of this. First I will say, his rushing upside, like, everyone was surprised about his 40 time. He can book it.
Yes.
But he doesn't play looking for that like Jaden Daniels does. And so I think
Which is nice.
It is. I mean, it saves some injury potential. I am out on Drake May for this season. I think the footwork is very concerning. Even the coach, you know, head coach Mayo came out and was like, he's got a lot of work to do, you know? And then I would say on top of that, there's two things, which, I mean, you can also see this with another UNC quarterback who may have made some bad plays worse this last season and held on to the ball a little bit too long. And so that's something that I've been seeing with Drake May and some like Matt Waldman RSP casts, like people who I trust in the scouting space have been like, hey, this dude is going to cause some issues. He holds on to the ball too long, makes bad plays, kind of panics under pressure when, you know, there's a sack or an interception that he could have avoided. And then I think on top of that, like with NFL coverages, he struggled in college when they would change reads change really how the
like
field
formations.
Picture, yep, how yeah. the field picture looked. And I think that is something that NFL defenses. Maybe, you know, his first 3 weeks he comes out firing and does great if he starts the beginning. But I think NFL defenses are going to realize pretty quickly, oh, hey, we just have to change the picture, and this guy is going to lose sight of what really needs to happen. So I think the footwork is concerning. I think the holding on to the ball too long and then making a last-second bad decision is also concerning. And I think the pre-snap, you know, the pre-snap reads as well are concerning for me. So those, again, I am lower on Drake May than consensus, and I will say that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And honestly, at this point, I mean, we're, what are we, July 22nd? Again, I think there are multiple signs pointing both ways. Where is it going to be Brissett or is it going to be May? We just don't know yet, and we're going to let it play out. We're going to find out within the next couple of weeks, I think, for sure,
yep,
who's going to be the bona fide starter heading into week one for New England.
Absolutely.
And they're playing the long game, so they really don't have to start Drake May if they don't feel it's time. They're free to take their time and to save him from destroying his development if he's not ready. I do think all signs point to J.J. McCarthy sitting to begin the year.
I would
at
agree.
Least. And Sam Darnold, I think, it seems like he's ready to take the starting job. Ryan, I want to hear what you think about this. If you think that there's even if it's an off chance, do you think Sam Darnold could potentially resurrect his career in the best situation by far in his entire career?
I think resurrect might be a little bit heavy handed, but that's not to say that I don't think he can have a better season in Minnesota than he has in Carolina, and then I guess last year was in San Fran, but he only played one game. I mean, it, like you said, it is a very good situation to land in. You have a very good offensive minded head coach who's a former quarterback. You have a very good offensive coordinator in Wes Phillips. You've got the best receiver in football. You've got one of the best tight ends in football. You've got one of the more promising young wide receivers, assuming he's not suspended. I think there's a chance for it. I mean, we saw with Kirk Cousins, he wasn't asked to win games all the time with the Vikings. It's a very, like,
right,
make the right read, don't throw the interception. And I think Darnold does have the ability to do that if he's not seeing ghosts like he was in New York.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That same logic to me can be applied to J.J. McCarthy, because all J.J. McCarthy needs to do is make the right reads and not throw interceptions, which is all that we saw him do in Michigan. And that's why when he was at Michigan, there was a lot of like discussion about, oh, he's just a system quarterback. Like, he wasn't asked to do a lot. And while he's going to be tasked with throwing the ball more in the NFL, not necessarily like Patrick Mahomes level. Like, he's not going to be asked to win games with his arm. But similar to Drake May, he's got a lot of work to do. I don't think that's surprising to anybody. And I mean, there's a reason why the Vikings gave Sam Darnold the contract they did and signed him so quickly. It's because they wanted a priority backup who can start at least in the early parts of the season, depending on how J.J. McCarthy's progression works in this offseason. And we're going to have to see how it goes. I mean, it's the same situation with Drake May, where it's very up in the air until like the preseason. I do think it's less up in the air because I just don't think he's going to start a lot, but it is still a conversation that is going to be had, and we're going to hear QB competition a lot during training camp, if I had to guess.
Yeah, it's going to be entertaining, and I already can see all of the highlight videos of, you know, who looked better with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison on the practice field, who had the better highlight throws and the highlight connections and stuff like that. And so many conclusions are going to be drawn. I will say, I will never forget those Sam Darnold days with the Jets when he was starting off his career with a horrible, horrible team overall, horrible coaching
Adam
staff.
Gase is a QB guru, Nathan. What are you talking about?
I know Sam Darnold was set up to be the next Peyton Manning. That's what I learned from that entire experience. The poor guy, man, he would have, oh yeah. I remember this one game where he was playing the Colts. He had this unbelievable touchdown pass where he like escaped the pocket, had this throw outside the pocket when he was on the run. And it was just like, that is Sam Darnold at his best. And that is why they drafted him. And that was the best that you would ever see ever again. Oh my gosh.
That was the pinnacle. Okay.
Whew. It was rough to say the least.
Here's to hoping he shows those flashes that got him picked so early in the first round. But let's round out this discussion with a little quick blurb about everybody's favorite quarterback, my favorite for sure. I definitely don't hate him. Right. Bo Nix. I hate him. I want that clear. I do not like him. Okay. I don't think he's a good quarterback.
So what did he do to you?
When he was a freshman,
what happened when you
5 years ago, I didn't like him. So I don't like him now. I do this with a quarterback every year. I just don't like him. It's Sam Ehlinger, Spencer Rattler, Quinn Ewers, Bo Nix. There's always somebody.
Who did you not like last year?
In last year's draft class?
Yeah.
Will Levis, I guess, would have to take the cake for that one more by proxy.
Take
but
the mayo.
I thought you weren't a big AR guy, were you?
No, I wasn't in terms of, like, I think he's going to be a better fantasy quarterback than he will NFL quarterback. Yeah. But,
which is still yet to be seen. Like,
right.
Yeah, I can't crap on you for that yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we saw the flashes that lead me to think I'm going to be wrong on that front, which I'm fine with. Like I said, I already hedged with the I think he's going to be better fantasy than NFL.
Yeah.
But as for Bo Nix, I think he's just going to suck. If I'm going to be straight up with you, I just don't think he's a great quarterback. And I mean, I might eat so much dirt on this one, but I only saw him do well at Oregon, which granted he did great stuff at Oregon, but that's a really, really easy offense and a really easy conference to put up gaudy numbers in.
Oh.
And I understand that Sean Payton has been speaking about him the same way he spoke about Taysom Hill and how they're both essentially the second coming of Christ, which I don't think is the case.
I don't know. I mean, I think Taysom Hill has a really good chance to still be a starting franchise quarterback for the next 10 years, given the right situation.
What is he, like 34?
Yeah, he's geriatric.
He didn't come into the league until he was like 28 or something.
But, yeah, he's Mormon. He did a mission and all that stuff. It's crazy. Crazy work out there at BYU.
I think with Nix, I kind of disagree with you and your take on Nix.
I disagree. You're wrong.
What better situation could you have asked for Bo Nix to jump into?
It's perfect.
When the way Sean Payton operates his offense, and the sole reason he threw away a chance to make a wild card spot in the playoffs last year and bench Russell Wilson and threw away $180 million just to get him off the team, it was because Russell Wilson wouldn't just do what he freaking said.
Yep.
And that is exactly what Bo Nix is going to do. Exactly what he's going to do. And no, he's not going to have Pac-12 Oregon numbers or that production at all. He's going to be a mid to low end QB2 producing, I'm sure, as a rookie. But that's what Payton wants for a young guy that he wants to build the entire team not around Bo Nix, but with Bo Nix. And we can talk about Bo Nix's upside in the future. But I honestly think, Of all these quarterbacks, this might be bold, I think Bo Nix is incredibly safe. Incredibly safe.
Yep.
From in fantasy, no. no one's drafting him.
No.
When you're talking dynasty, I think he's incredibly safe for the next couple of years because you know exactly what you're going to get. And you know, with the investment that the Broncos have in him and the investment that the franchise as a whole has in Sean Payton and what he wants to do with building that offense and building that defense, I think Bo Nix is the guy to just kind of be used for the next couple of years.
is that a flag plant? Are we saying that Bo Nix is the guy before he's taken a preseason snap?
I mean, I'm not saying he's like the Caleb Williams guy. I'm just saying, they spent the 11th overall pick on him. Or was it the 12th overall? They spent the 12th overall pick on him. And a ton of people in the pre-draft process were saying, oh, Bo Nix is going to go to the second round. They got a day two grade on him, all this stuff. I mean, that's all fine and dandy and fine and well. But between the draft capital investment, between all of the signs pointing to Sean Payton wanting this exact type of quarterback with all of the moves he's made dating back to last year, I think it's the match that you wanted. And there's a reason he was being mocked to the Broncos all offseason. Even though people were lower on him from a scouting perspective, we just knew he was going to go to the Broncos.
And here's the thing, too. Like this is just another indicator of he does what you want him to do.
Right.
125 of his total 467 pass attempts last season were behind the line of scrimmage. You know, like he is a system quarterback.
That's awesome.
The flag plant here. Hold on. Let me make my point, and then I'll let you get in. The point I'm making here is Sean Payton is just doing the dink and dunk, and okay, you're going here, and you're doing this, and you throw it at this timing, and okay, I need you to check it down this amount, and okay, you know, like Bo Nix, 64 completion percentage of like close to the line of scrimmage passes, 10 plus yards, 70%, right? He's going to be the guy that's going to pin and needle you to death. You might get some yak plays here and there, but then he'll do 10 plus yard throws, and he's thrown 70% yep. on those, right? And yep. that's exactly what's going to happen in the NFL. The reason I think we're so confident in this is because what he did in college is maybe not exactly the same. I pray that they don't do 27% behind the line of scrimmage. I will be so sad.
One in four passing attempts behind the line of scrimmage. But that's crazy.
He's everywhere. He's hyper efficient. And that's what Sean Payton wants. And so to say he did this at a high level in college, which is not going to great, you know, equate to fancy fantasy numbers, but he did that at a high level in college. He's being asked to do a similar thing in the NFL. There's not that much of a learning curve, which for the other quarterbacks there is. So that's why I feel like he's a safe prospect. He's never going to be anything crazy. We talked about quarterback dead zone. I think the absolute max quarterbacks 8 to 15. We talked about that in the Warp episode. Like, that would be the max he's going to get where he's in that 0.1
like the Brock Purdy range.
Exactly.
Kind of in fantasy where Brock Purdy is right now.
But
that's
he's
where
never
going to
cost anywhere near that.
Right.
And I think that is his ceiling. And I think his floor is
not in 2024, worst. In my
yeah,
opinion.
No, but no. We're not saying that. No. But I think he's incredibly safe because he's being asked to do what he's always done. And he's done that very well.
Yeah.
John, will you repeat that stat for me one more time?
125 of 467 of his pass attempts were behind the line of scrimmage. So 125, so 27%.
27% of his passes were behind the line of scrimmage, and we're thinking that is indicative of good quarterback play.
Nope. The point I'm making.
The point is you don't need incredible quarterback play from Bo Nix. He doesn't have to be the hero of the day. He just needs to do what Sean Payton says, get it done, and that's something to me that you can build off of. Like, you can once you know that he can do what you say at the NFL level, then you can build off that. All these other guys have all of these developmental questions. Bo Nix, you can throw in day one,
yep,
and he's gonna get the job done.
Yep.
And it might not be the prettiest thing of all time. Like, there's not gonna be, like you said, a bunch of wow plays down the field and stuff like that, but there could be in the future. There could.
Yep.
So
He's the safe pick, right? You're going to the prom, and you're like, okay, this person is not going to attack my mother in the parking lot, right?
This is
the pick, and he's hyper efficient, right? Middle of the field, 10 plus yards, 70% completion. So that's the point I'll make on that.
He just takes the open throw. Russ just wants to do whatever the frick with the ball.
And he's maybe he's the homeschooler who doesn't get seven, eight, nine jokes, right? safe take to the prom.
Right.
Maybe I'll eat crow on this one, and I might be blinded by hatred that is, 6 years old at this point. But
man.
That's resentment, man.
Yeah, I know.
We need to get you some therapy. Sponsored by BetterHelp.
He has been in college forever, dude.
He's old, but maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? I do think he does finish in the middle of the pack for this year, just because I think he's going to have more volume than JJ McCarthy and Drake May. So if that's where it comes down to it, and you know, I'll eat crow at his QB2 ceiling and move on from there.
Yeah, you know, I think really the guy of this bunch that has the highest upside in 2024 is Michael Penix by far. I mean, he's going to be sitting on the bench every single week, and you're going to get approximately a ceiling of 0 points from him. I think his outlook is really, really promising for the foreseeable future. I cannot
wait
to see.
He's going to learn so much.
Right, right. The eighth overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft is going to learn for the next 3 years while Kirk Cousins gets paid $100 million And, you know, it ends up being the succession plan when he's 29 years old. So I am super
just
excited
Nix's
for
current
that.
Age.
You know what sucks, too, is we were so, Avery and I were so gosh dang right about Michael Penix as a prospect and where he could be drafted in the NFL draft. And then the freaking Falcons have to screw everyone's plans over, including, might I add, the Minnesota Vikings, who I think wanted Michael Penix more than J.J. McCarthy. And
yeah,
the what ifs, I cannot even think about the what ifs for too long or I get too ticked, because all I wanted to see was Michael Penix play in the NFL. And now I can't see it for another 3 years. I can't rant about this. We're at 53 minutes and it's time to leave. So Avery has been really, really quiet for the last 20 minutes. I don't know what happened to him. I think he actually fell asleep. I didn't think it was worth waking him up because I felt like talking with you guys. And there's, you know, Avery's just kind of lame and he's a dad now and doesn't get much sleep. So I just let him doze off.
Look at him all tuckered out over
there. I know.
Oh my goodness. He's got a little drool coming down.
I know.
If you hear,
be quiet. So anyways, thank you all so much for listening again to our episode five or something, I think, of the pod so far. Lots of great discussion here, fantasy and dynasty. We're going to keep this going as long as you guys keep coming back. So this is a show about fantasy football, and we're going to keep giving that to you. So y'all have a good one. We will talk to you later.
It's a show about fantasy football.